House Democrats are exploring new ways to enforce their subpoenas of current and former Trump administration officials. An effort in the Capitol would raise the compensation level for members of Congress. And President Trump is pulling back from his threat to put new tariffs on Mexican imports after a reported commitment from Mexico to help limit immigration to the U.S. Lisa Mascaro is the chief congressional correspondent for the Associated Press. Lisa, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having us.
Well, this week, the Democratic-controlled House approved new powers for committees aimed at enforcing subpoenas they've been issuing in the aftermath of the Mueller report. What would these powers do?
Yeah, absolutely. This was a big day here in the House yesterday in their pursuit of these investigations against President Trump. Your listeners might have been hearing how the administration is just really blocking the oversight committees from obtaining information. The Trump administration is blocking witnesses. Of course, the Attorney General has been asked to provide a full copy of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on the Trump-Russia probe. Initially, he declined. And so amid what Democrats call this stonewalling and this blockade of their oversight abilities, they passed a resolution. Basically, it's a sort of internal rules change that allows the chairman of the committees to just go ahead and seek what is often called civil contempt. But basically, it just means to allow the chairman to go ahead and file lawsuits to force the compliance of the administration. So, for example, you know, well, let me just back up and say, you know, normally they would sort of hold someone in contempt and say, okay, we're going to file contempt procedures against you and hold you in criminal contempt. Well, you know, in the case of Attorney General Barr, you know, that just goes up to the Department of Justice, and the thinking is that, you know, the Justice Department then would not would basically not accept it, would just sort of reject it. And the Democrats have found that in filing legal action, taking these issues to courts, the courts are more willing to side with Congress. We've seen some initial moves by the courts to side with Congress as they try to get Trump's accounting firm to turn over some documents, as they seek other documents from Deutsche Bank in terms of the president's finances. Basically, this is a real it's a real sort of standoff between the powers of the executive, the powers of the legislative, and then when you have the judicial branch come in, the courts have tended in the past, we'll see how it goes, to side with the oversight ability of Congress. And so the Democrats are kind of banking on that, and they're kind of thinking rather than fight this stuff out with the administration, they'll just let the courts decide.
And another front in this now, we're just hearing the news going on this afternoon, has to do with the immigration question on the census. Congress, House Democrats want documentation on how the House or how the White House arrived at this question. We've seen some documents come out from a deceased Republican consultant on some of the thinking behind the immigration question on the census. What's the latest on that as this is going on today?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a hearing underway. I don't know if they've gaveled that shut. One of my colleagues was over there covering it. But, you know, it's, again, sort of the same situation where the House Oversight Committee is preparing to hold Attorney General Barr and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross in contempt, and then they would presumably file, you know, these court challenges because the administration is withholding this evidence. The Attorney General sent word to Chairman Cummings that the president would be invoking executive privilege, which means, you know, basically hands off. We don't have to show you anything. And it was a pretty busy hearing over there today. A lot of members wanted to speak about this. And, you know, for the members of Congress, they really see this as, you know, an infringing on their role, that Congress has this Article I role to conduct oversight. And so they really say it's not just for this president and his actions, but for the future relations between Congress and the executive branch. Of course, if you're the president, you know, on the end of those subpoenas, you don't see it that way. You see it as an attack on the presidency, and that's why you see the Trump administration fighting these documents.
Speaking of standoffs between Congresses and presidents, the House Judiciary Committee brought former White House counsel and key Watergate figure from the Nixon era, John Dean, to testify on Monday. What came out of that?
Yeah, well, that was interesting. That's really the Democrats, you know, they sort of lost their star witness when special counsel Mueller really said, you know, in a public statement, gosh, what is it, 2 weeks ago now, that he wants his report to speak for himself, and he really does not want to come testify. They were really hoping he would, and they're still hoping to get him in here. So in the meantime, I think Democrats are feeling a bit frustrated that the American public maybe didn't fully read the Mueller report or doesn't understand all of what's in it. And so they thought by bringing in some other high-profile names, it might sort of focus attention. And in their minds, sort of who better than former White House counsel John Dean, who has a real parallel figure in the current Trump administration in White House, former White House counsel Don McGahn, who they also want to hear from. People might remember John Dean, you know, testified before Congress in a way that was very pivotal in the Nixon era and in bringing down the Nixon presidency. And so they wanted to hear from him and the parallels that he saw. And of course, he served them up. He said, you know, the special counsel provided a roadmap for the Congress to investigate the president. And he called on his counterpart, the more recently former White House counsel, Don McGahn, to come testify. Of course, Mr. McGahn, through his lawyer, has said that he will not be testifying, that the White House has asked him not to. But, you know, in Mueller's report, McGahn is one of the most oft-cited figures. He is cited numerous times in the report because he was among those talking to the president and telling the president why some of the president's actions should not be taken. He was trying, as the White House counsel, to sort of warn the president, you know, as his counsel, that, you know, if you do these actions, they could be seen as obstruction. And, you know, that then would be an impeachable offense. And so, of course, Democrats are very eager to hear from him. They want Mr. McGahn to lay that out, but they don't have Mr. McGahn, so they brought in Mr. Dean to make that case yesterday or Monday.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Lisa Mascaro is with us from the Associated Press, chief congressional correspondent there. We're turning now to President Trump pulling back from his threat to put new tariffs on Mexican imports after a reported commitment from Mexico to help limit immigration to the U.S. You can join in on this at 800-642-1234. Do you think this deal, if it comes to fruition, will make a difference on the immigration issue? Do you think the tactic of threatening tariffs is a good way to get our neighbors to do something? Are you worried about the impact of back-and-forth tariffs and uncertainty surrounding those between the U.S. and trading partners? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lisa, we've got this tariff threat now withdrawn by the president and apparently a deal. What do we know about what the U.S. and Mexico are agreeing to?
Right. Well, this was a late-breaking story last week, and it's been sort of disputed ever since. So, of course, President Trump, I will just back up and say, is slightly tied to what we were just talking about, because the day after Robert Mueller came out and sort of reiterated the findings of his report, President Trump sort of took center stage and said he was going to slap these tariffs on Mexico as a way to force Mexico to the table over the issue of illegal immigration. What they then spent several days, 48 hours, I think, negotiating to try to end this standoff that really both countries said would be devastating to the economies. And Mexico, of course, is the U.S.'s number one trade partner. Everything from, you know, avocados and cucumbers to, I'm sure your folks there in Wisconsin know, you know, parts for different industrial components and products, industrial products. So big leverage there that the president was throwing on the table. What they ended up with in this announcement late Friday, you know, is a little bit of what has already been underway. I mean, there is a new commitment from Mexico to strengthen the southern border with Guatemala by providing sending Mexican troops to the border to shore that up and prevent crossings. And then the Mexican government also agreed to process asylum claims, more asylum claims in that country so that Guatemalans passing through Mexico to the U.S. stop and then have some of their claims process there so that they're not all coming straight into the U.S. They did not agree to a more broader asylum overhaul that the U.S. really wanted, which is basically to keep all Guatemalans and Salvadorans and Hondurans in as they come up in Mexico and not letting them come to the border with the U.S. And the Mexican government did not agree with that. Now, of course, the president, when some of those headlines came out that said, well, you know, the deal wasn't really so big, made some statements saying, oh, there's more to come, and we actually do have a better deal. And that's sort of been the last day or so, a kind of back and forth between the Mexican negotiators from the Mexican government and the U.S. negotiators. Mexican government sort of saying, you know, no, we agreed to what we agreed to and not anything more. And Trump saying, no, there's more to come. So, you know, folks over at the White House beat have been sort of trying to sort that out and get a little more clarity. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, a lot of folks are coming up from these countries. They're fleeing what advocates for immigrants and human rights advocates would say are sort of, you know, refugee-like conditions. There's drought conditions. There's security concerns in the Central American countries. There's the draw, of course, of the economy in the north. There really should be more of a refugee response, a humanitarian response to the situation at the border, and sort of trying to take this you know, economic response and trying to slap these tariffs. A lot of advocates who work with these groups say it's not the kind of thing, you know, that's going to change the situation on the ground. You know, the smugglers are sort of able to capitalize on the fears that the border will be closed and sort of, you know, ushering folks in, saying, look, you know, if you want to get in, you got to get in now. And, you know, so it's just sort of really created this crisis point at the border where we are seeing skyrocketing numbers. I think it was 140,000.
We're talking with Lisa Mascaro of the Associated Press about some of the top political news of the week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this reported deal between the U.S. and Mexico, the use of tariffs to try to get that deal? Are you worried about the effect of dueling tariffs and uncertainty over tariffs could have on the country, on you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our weekly conversation about the latest news in national politics. Lisa Mascaro is our guest, chief congressional correspondent for the Associated Press. Let's bring in a call now. Bob is with us in Milwaukee. Bob, hi.
How you doing? I think one of the things that we do not really address very much are the consequences of certain short-term political actions like what's going on in Mexico right now. If you were China, for example, would you trust anything that this government was doing? I mean, they don't keep their word. They make an agreement with Mexico, and then they turn around and change what they're doing. Of course, the problem could be easily or much better solved if we tripled the number of judges that we have to smooth up the system and reduce a lot of the bottlenecks which have been created artificially to create a problem which did not exist before.
Bob, thanks for the call. Two big issues there, Lisa. I want to touch on each of them. First of all, the idea that after signing the USMCA agreement, not ratified by the legislatures of the three countries yet, and then threatening these tariffs, Bob saying that raises a concern that other countries won't trust us as negotiators.
You know, it's a really notable point that the caller makes. The timing of the president's tariff announcement last week came at the same time, and I think within an hour or two, the same day for sure, that the president had just sent up to Congress some notification on the USMCA. The administration has been pressing Congress, pressing Speaker Pelosi and Leader Mitch McConnell to take up the USMCA for votes this summer. They were in negotiations, and then these tariffs hit. And again, it's right, it really does sort of jumble what had been a path and a narrative. And just to sort of broaden that out a little bit, you know, the president is working with China on tariffs that both countries have put on each other in the trade war with China. And, you know, it's heading to an economic summit where these are the kinds of issues that really do give pause and raise concerns. And it also, again, was a shift for the president. You know, often tariffs are used in these economic disputes, but here he was using tariffs in an unrelated, you know, dispute over immigration that really sort of is a new terrain for the way these tariffs are used in sort of trade negotiations. So yeah, it raises a lot of questions on what kind of partner the United States is in this realm, and is going to leave some lingering questions.
Bob also mentioned a shortage of judges on the border to process claims of asylum. I've heard other people talk about this. Is this something, Lisa, that people have on the table? This needs to be part of our solution here?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been part of some of the immigration legislation that has been thrown around in Congress, in the House and Senate, the need to expand the number of immigration judges to more quickly process those claims at the border. But at the moment, I don't know if there's any. I know they had talked about that again a little bit during the shutdown, when there was another emphasis by the president on the border situation during the federal government shutdown at the start of this year. And I think there was a little bit of a resource there, but I don't believe it's up to the level the advocates were pushing for.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Lisa Mascaro is with us from the Associated Press. Want to move on to a couple other stories going on out there. A group of first responders to the September 11th attacks was in the Capitol yesterday lobbying for the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund. Former TV host and comedian Jon Stewart has been involved in this cause. He gave an emotional speech to a House subcommittee where just the subcommittee showed up, not the whole committee, so a lot of empty seats. Here's a listen to Stewart.
This hearing should be flipped. These men and women should be up on that stage, and Congress should be down here answering their questions as to why this is so damn hard and takes so damn long, and why no matter what they get, something's always pulled back and they got to come back.
So 18 years after the event, Stewart making an emotional case for first responders in the 9/11 attacks, Lisa.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my colleagues was at that hearing yesterday, and they had posted at AP News, at the AP News site, the story, and it was very emotional. And, you know, this is a fund that needs to be, that Congress needs to address and continue making sure it's funded. Every few years this comes up, and, it's lagging again this year, and they've, like so much of the fiscal fights up here, you know, they push it to the deadline, right? They push it to the last minute, and there's often a standoff because they're trying to bring in lots of other extraneous issues. And real people, in this case, the 9/11 responders, you know, get lost in the shuffle.
What do we hear from members of Congress on that subcommittee in response?
I will say in somewhat of a defense, I guess you would say, you know, members come and go from these hearings. You know, they just like people might tune into C-SPAN and watch the floor proceedings. You know, it's not like they're all sitting there. They're moving around constantly during the day. They're in and out of the hearings, in and out of the floor. They're not always sitting there at all, listening to one another, listening to the witnesses and the testimony. You can certainly say it's a criticism of Congress and the way it works, but it is the way it works. And I think, a number of members would probably have, would try to defend themselves that way yesterday. I think they do think that this 9/11 bill will get passed and the funding will continue for that fund. But, you know, again, it's a matter of time, and having someone high profile like Jon Stewart come in is certainly going to shed a light and maybe get things moving a little bit.
In our last couple of minutes, some members of Congress are pushing to approve a cost of living increase for mm-hmm. congressional salaries. Some members of both parties on this. Where is that now?
Yeah, so that was supposed to come for a vote this week and got shelved for now because, as you might imagine, there's a lot of controversy around that. Lawmakers receive $174,000 a year, you know, to be in Congress. It's a lot of money for a lot of folks. But the lawmakers will tell you it's also not a lot of money when you're trying to sort of support two households, one here and one back in your home district. A lot of members of Congress are newer members, people who still have college debt, people with young families, and they say, look, you know, we don't want Congress to be just for the wealthy. But as you can imagine, a pay raise is not exactly the kind of thing voters want to hear about, especially when many voters, you know, are struggling themselves. So that bill is shelved for now. Part of the problem is that this is the kind of thing that the two parties need to kind of hold hands and jump. You need Republicans and Democrats to come together so that one side can't blame the other for, you know, getting a pay raise. They thought they had a sort of bipartisan agreement, Democrats and Republicans, but then the Democratic leadership said that the Republican leaders were unable to sort of produce their end of the votes. And there is some truth to that. You can sort of see how that happened. So they shelved it for now, and they're going to try to take another look at it, maybe next week, maybe in later. So we'll see if they can rebuild that coalition. You know, again, you can probably sort of imagine the ads that will be run against these lawmakers. Yet at the same time, there's kind of a growing feeling, especially in a high-rent city like Washington, D.C., that, you know, it does limit who can sort of join Congress if you can't afford it, right? If you can't afford to do it. So it's a tough issue for them, and we'll see if they come back around at it.
Lisa, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, you bet. Pleasure to be here.
That's Lisa Mascaro, Chief Congressional Correspondent at the Associated Press. She was with us for a look at some of the week's top news in national politics. Still time for you to share your thoughts. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org. What do you hope to see out of a reported deal? The details still to come between the United States and Mexico when it comes to cooperation on trying to slow the number of immigrants coming from Central America through Mexico and then claiming asylum in many cases at America's southern border. Let us know. Again, tweet us at Central Time WPR. You can always email ideas@WPR.org.